I have in studio with me Scott Loomis, director of the Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust. Thanks for coming in this morning, Scott.
Good morning, Carolyn.
So you've got several projects that you're working on, I believe in Heber, and like 48 units for sale at this point for essential workers? And can you talk about this project, where it is, and who are the essential workers?
Yes, we just got approval for, it's actually going to be 49 units, that'll be for sale for essential workers. Essential workers would be people that work for the government, your nonprofit workers at the hospital, police, fire, EMTs, that type of thing, teachers. And they're going to be for sale units over on Southfield Road, real close to the railroad from the Heber Creeper. And they will be finalized probably in August, the plat, and we'll start on the infrastructure this fall and probably start in early spring on the actual vertical construction. I think we'll have recruiting probably starting around the first of the year for those essential workers. We already have a number of people who have contacted us, but we won't formally select the people, but as I say, the essential workers will have the priority.
And how will you decide? I mean, if you've got 49 units and you have 100 applicants, will it be a board sitting down to evaluate who would be most eligible?
Or? There'll be priorities. We'll have some of it up to a little higher levels, maybe 120% of the area median income. That would be for families where maybe both people work. But we'll have priorities. We haven't actually finalized the priorities yet, but they'll be prioritized. And it'll take probably a year to 2 years to build out that many units, too. So as we get people eligible, we'll go ahead and build the units.
And are these apartment complexes, townhouses?
No. They're going to be single family and some townhomes and some duplex units, too. So we've got a little combination, different prices for different size families.
Okay, and you said it's in the Southfields area.
Yes.
Okay. And the inhabitants, you said, you know, they're people change jobs, and they may be a school teacher this year, but then they mm-hmm. decide to take a job that's in Provo or elsewhere.
That's an issue everywhere with affordable housing, and I think probably what we'll do is have a requirement that they maintain their job as an essential worker. Because as long as there is somebody waiting to purchase a unit, we'll probably give them a certain amount of time and have them, if they come to Heber or if we were in Summit County with a similar type project, we would probably require them to sell that unit after a period of time.
Okay. So you've also got a number of senior apartments in Heber. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Sure. A couple of years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, we built a Prestige Senior Living Center with the Wasatch County Housing Authority. And those were 23 units that targeted seniors. And basically, they were lower rents for families under households under 50% of the median income. And we found out that there's a demand for seniors at a higher level of income. So these will be 38 units, one and two bedrooms, which will be targeting 50 to 80% of the median income.
And what is that?
It's based on family size. In Heber City, for a family of four, it's about 72,000. So probably in the range of 25 to 30,000 up to maybe 40 to 50,000, depending on whether it's a single person or a couple.
Okay. And it will be for over 65 or
actually
what is that?
62 and above.
Don't tell me that. Okay.
There's also some further definitions like disabled and that type of thing too. So they'll be available for those, call them special needs.
Mm-hmm. And what about, will there be children allowed at all in the facility who live there?
No.
Okay. What about pets and...
We have a pet policy, and a number of people have letters from doctors saying they're essential and that type of thing. So we open it up so people can have pets because we're going to get them either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the timing on those again?
They're under construction right now. Okay. They'll be done at the beginning, probably the end of the year, November, December, and we're already developing a wait list for those.
Yeah, 38 units probably.
38 units.
Is that going to come close to solving senior living
issues? I think it'll probably meet the need right now. They're next to the Abington Assisted Living Center, and there's going to be a extensive care unit right across the street. And, of course, the senior center is right there and the library. So it's a great location, good place for seniors.
Yeah, great. So, and then also you've got 15 homes that are in various stages of readiness, I guess, in Francis.
Yeah, we're building, using our mutual self-help program, we're completing 8 homes, which we haven't set the date yet, but it'll probably be around August 9th or 10th. We'll have an open house for completing eight homes in Uinta Willis subdivision in Francis. And then we've got another group of 7 ready to start as soon as we get them closed. So hopefully next month they'll be starting construction on those.
And how do people, win out on one of these opportunities?
Yeah, this is an owner-build program, so they have to put the labor in. They're already qualified for the next group. So we're not sure, but this fall we may be going to some lots in Silver Creek Village and doing this program, which has always been done. We've built probably 145, I think it is, homes under this program, all in Francis, Camas, and Oakley. So this will be the first time we're coming on the west side of the county. And we'll probably start recruiting sometime in August for those.
And when you say it sounds like a bit like a Habitat for Humanity model, or no?
No, this is very different.
Okay, how is it different?
Well, they get a subsidized loan. It goes as low as 1%, 33 years amortization. It can go as far as 38 years. And they work about 1,000 to 1,200 hours with a group. So we provide a construction supervisor, and 7 or 8 families will work together to build all of their homes. Nobody moves in until they're done. And they do about 65% of the labor. And these are really nice homes, too. They're the ones we're building up in Francis now are on half acre. We even have a couple of acre lots, 1,800 square foot single family homes, just really nice living conditions.
But the full financial responsibility is on the homeowner.
Yes.
And what if you don't know how to do that? Well, do you not get to be one of those selected?
They train them. We have construction supervisors that are on site all the time. And they go through, and some people that actually know what they're doing have their way of doing it, but they do it our way. That way everybody does it the same. And they get trained for each task, and they do some of the pickup on the framing and, roofing and landscaping and putting the flooring down and those type of things. So it's stuff. It's work that is not easily taught, but depending on the group, some of them will really know what they're doing and work hard and get it done in 6 months, and other groups have taken as long as a year or two. So it's
the property that they're built on. You said some of them are on half acres, that type of thing. How does that property get financed? Is that also through that's homeowner?
That's through the USDA rural development loan. So they purchase the lot, and then the construction loan is also rolls into their permanent loan. So they basically get one loan, qualify for it. And with that subsidized interest rate, the example I use is if they could qualify for maybe a $150,000 loan, which doesn't get you much of anything, they could qualify for up to maybe $250,000 because of the low interest rate and the longer amortization.
Mm-hmm. So why is it? I mean, you've got projects going on in Wasatch County, other parts of Summit County. Why nothing in Park City? Is it just so expensive? Is it difficult to get the approvals?
Well, we could have built thousands of units in the last 17 years that I've been here, but it's entitled land is the whole key. We do have approvals finally in Silver Creek Village, where we're going to start 64 apartments hopefully this fall, and then also 34 townhomes, which will be for sale, targeting below 80% of the median income. So this would be, it's been a while since we've built here on this part of the county. We built some apartments 3 or 4 years ago, but this will be a good experience to start out at Silver Creek Village, where there's 330 units total required for affordable housing. So this will be the first roughly 95 units that will be built in the first phase.
And is Mountain Lands partnering with the developer to do this, or how is that part of it working?
We're doing it. The developer has provided some land for us in basically donated land. So we're fulfilling his obligation for that first phase.
Okay. Well, Park City has a lofty goal of, 800 units in less than 10 years.
I think 2023 got about eight left.
They have about what?
Eight left, I think. 2026, I believe, is.
Okay. They've got 8 years going. Okay. So do you anticipate participating in helping Park City get to that place, or what?
Possibly. We've had some discussion with various people at the city about potential projects. Right now they're kind of focused on using the land they have to get some units and for sale units. But I think clearly in that mix they'll need some apartments. And right now we have nothing that we're planning on. But we've had several discussions about some possible development.
Do you ever partner with businesses that, say, have like a large footprint already in place, a grocery store or that type of thing, and say, let's figure out how to put a bunch of townhomes on top of this building? And, is there that type of freedom or creativity to pursue?
Well, a good example is the Whole Foods out at the Junction. They came to us saying that because they had to redevelop the subdivision that had already been approved and had the infrastructure in. And they found out they had an affordable housing obligation because they had to basically rezone it. And we came up with the idea of over 18,000 square feet of commercial, and the Whole Foods is 43,000 square feet, that they build 20 one-bedroom units up above the 18,000 square feet of commercial. And they were still a little hesitant and weren't ready to go forward with it. And we told them we would either purchase it from them. If it was a condominium, we would lease it from them and take care of it, or they could do it on their own if it penciled out for them. And they were very, very pleased that it penciled out for them. So it's been a win-win, I think, all the way around.
Yeah, do you see that model going into other parts of the county and working in a place like in Park City to help you hit those goals?
Again, they're just so little development and opportunities that each development has some requirement, each new development. So being creative and finding ways to make it work is the challenge.
Yeah. So it's the 25th anniversary in September for Mountain Lands Community Housing. And what can you give us a little bit of a rundown of the history? I mean, 25 years, that's
Mountain Lands started in 1993 and actually had a different name. And apparently the part-time executive director was also the editorial cartoon writer for the Park Record, and offended a bunch of people, so they got rid of him and changed the name. Our first project was in 1995, and I've been there since 2001, and we've built over 200 homes and something like 254 apartments, I think, and have quite a bit in the pipeline right now. But it's been a good run, and I think now that both the county and the city and Wasatch County are realizing that we've got some real issues with a need for affordable housing, that we've got a lot in the pipeline right now, and I think we're going to be very strong and viable and help both counties with that need.
Yeah. So does the organization help people acquire that funding? I mean, help with the loans, help with identifying where to go and...
Yeah, there's particularly with restricted for sale units, there's a couple of mortgage brokers we work with who are familiar with the deed restrictions. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people say, don't worry, I've got a loan with my bank. They told me I qualify. And then, 6 weeks later, they're saying, oh, well, somebody in underwriting looked at it and saw these deed restrictions and they don't know what to do with it. So we try to steer them in the people that deal with them up front. So we do help people with that, and we help with the resales on some of the restricted units where they don't have to use a realtor or a broker or anybody. We just have a list. I think I heard the number the other day. It's about 900 people that are interested in purchasing. So if a unit comes available, there's always a buyer out there.
Yeah. Well, anything planned for the anniversary event?
They're doing some videos. The board and a couple of people on staff are doing it, so I've stayed out of it kind of. But we've got scheduled on September 15th, I think, from 5 to 7 right here behind you in Bob Wells Plaza. And Bob Wells is one of our founders and longtime board member and president. And he was honored with a plaza a couple of years ago. And we're going to have our celebration on it on September 15th.
Okay.
And I think actually tomorrow from 11 to 1 over at Rotary Park, and then next Monday at same time, 11 to 1, they're doing some testimonials. So if anybody wants to show up and say something about Mount Lance, they're welcome to do that.
Okay, where is that again? So you've got
Rotary Park.
Rotary Park tomorrow.
Tomorrow, Tuesday at 11 to 1.
11
and
to
then,
1.
Next Monday, 11 to 1.
Also at Rotary.
Rotary Park, yes.
Okay. And I presume you've reached out to many of the people that you've worked with over the years?
Yeah, this committee has reached out and has a number of people showing up, and we're going to provide lunch and everything. So if anybody feels strongly or wants to say thanks or hello or whatever,
right,
just come by.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you. That's Scott Loomis. He's the director for Mountain Lands Community Housing. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Your time is 8:30. Looks like a hot week. Next up on the phone, I have Kilo Zamora. Kilo teaches social change. He works at the University of Utah teaching social change. He serves as chair of the Salt Lake City Human Rights Commission. He's known for his skills to increase people's capacity for social change. He creates learning environments for groups to develop themselves and transform their communities. Good morning, Kilo. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So you have brought some expertise to the Park City Leadership Program for quite a number of years, and you're said to be the very best when developing dialogues to foster self-awareness, organizing communities, and creating solutions to divisive issues. We could use you in a lot of places right now. If this is what you're known for, maybe you should be in Helsinki even.
Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be something? So let's talk about social justice, social equity, social justice. We're hearing these terms a lot lately, and I even hear it like in the school districts with teachers using that system to work through issues and problems with their students. And it's a key priority that's been adopted by the Park City Council. It is part of our vernacular these days, but I'm sure a lot of people have very different interpretations of just what that means. Can you talk a little bit about what social equity means?
Yeah, it's a good question, and you're right. The language itself is just so vast. I mean, on one hand, people will take that term and think of it as, it's time just for us to get along with one another. And others who spend time looking at more of a system-wide approach begin to explore more of what's going on with our policies and procedures. And even when you get to that conversation, folks see it kind of in different ways. On the one hand, they want to make sure that their own rights are preserved while they're trying to increase the pie for others. Another group is still wondering about if we start paying attention to some groups, will my group be forgotten in this conversation? So it's up for a lot of interpretation, but in the end of the day, in Park City, if we go back to what the city council is doing and what the mayor's office is doing in Park City, they're really looking at trying to have a holistic approach that has a positive impact on all of Park City to increase their well-being indicators. So when we start focusing on one specific group, that means that it will have a positive effect on all the groups in Park City.
What is a well-being indicator?
So when you look into the research, some of the things that I've been finding that help me in my work when I'm running dialogue and helping groups think about social change is I've moved away from some of the language that's just about coming together. It's about unity. Although I love these words, what I have found that makes it easier for us to talk to each other and keep each other at the table is we look at these indices, and one of them is about well-being. So well-being indicators are all about that you have good, safe, healthy transportation, that we have good health care, great education for our children, that there aren't food deserts in our community. And when you put them all together, it increases the well-being of all of us. But when we concentrate those great things on one community, it doesn't affect us all. So we have to find a way to spread across those resources in the Greater Valley.
So how does that work when your whole economic model is based on making money?
Yeah, isn't that a challenge? I mean, you're getting right to one of the most challenging parts of the conversation. Well, I think what you do and what Park City has a great opportunity in front of them is there's a lot of small businesses in Park City, plus when you go to the resort. In both of those cases, of course, there's an economic model involved, but in the resort case, they know that we're chasing powder. It's hard to ski without good powder. So to have great powder means that we have to have a deep commitment to the environment to reduce global warming. And in small businesses, they know that they're living next door to their neighbors. And then for them to have great, successful businesses, they need to sustain both the economic side of their companies, but they also have to find ways to give back to their community. So when you put those kind of values forward in a space like Park City, you have to find great balance between making money, but also taking care of your community. So we're really looking at some social responsibility in the economic field of Park City.
Yeah, and social equity isn't just about necessarily underserved communities, our Latino community, but it also could include senior citizens, LGBTQ, people with disabilities, single moms. I mean, it could really encompass a lot of different categories.
Yeah, well, the concept right now that we're using in the social sciences is just to help people have good critical dialogue and thinking around this topic is the concept of intersectionality. And intersectionality simply means that we are taking into account not just one of someone's identities, but the multitude of aspects of our identities. So that might mean a single mother who is Latina and may be lesbian at the same time. And how do we think about how those parts of our identities intersect? And essentially, what's valuable about that is that before we were enumerating those groups, so we were just really trying to separate them out, and now we're trying to find a way to really integrate them together. So if we're designing something in the city, if the city council puts forward some measures for social equity, they're not doing it with just one specific group. They're trying to think about how that group interfaces on multiple levels. And that's really the challenge and the complexity that we're tackling right now.
Yeah, and what about the rhetoric that we hear out of Washington, D.C.? I mean, how does that affect our conversation when the president of the country is using terms that are what many would call racist remarks about certain classes of people? How do you work with that and balance that?
Well, yeah, you know what I come back to is a few important things. You're right, rhetoric can be destructive. And I have to just be really clear with the audience as they're listening to me today that the thing that separates out the kind of work that I do and the kind of work that others are doing is my eye is on the ball, and the ball is about well-being indicators. So I can skip over some of the rhetoric folks are saying, because what I'm really trying to get to is get us to the table to discuss, let's talk about the way education's going on in our community. Let's talk about healthcare. Let's talk about air quality. And let's talk about how there are some really positive and diverse ways to get to those same community goals. So pushing us towards that allows us to really dismantle some of our stereotypes and bias that we have. So I have been in a meeting where I've heard just flat-out racist remarks, and it gets to me, and it will always get to me, but my real end goal is how we build strong communities. Do I need to tackle that? Absolutely. But tackling it alone is not enough. It's always tackling it to get back to building this kind of community that we want to live in.
Sure, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about around race and racism. They're kind of two different conversations. Right now, you can look at numbers of, people of color who are in prisons, black men who are in prisons, the fears that they have whenever they have any kind of entanglement with law enforcement. You talk about the measurements of well-being, but these are institutionalized problems. Will well-being eventually help to offset that? We're talking about justice systems and economic drivers and all of those things.
Yeah, so I'm going to back up and say that I use the well-being index as one idea. But in my classes and in my research and in my work in the community, there's a convergence occurring, at least as I'm looking at it. And in healthcare, they have the social determinants of health, which is another way of saying well-being indicators. In peace studies, we have the peace indices. In some of the sociology studies, we're seeing happiness indexes. So my point is all of those same indices are really pointing at the same direction, which is how do we make healthy, sustainable communities? So back to your question about racism and the cradle-to-prison pipeline. So if you look at the cradle-to-prison pipeline and why so many African-American, mostly African-American males, are being trafficked towards prison, we can find some really interesting things in the research. One thing that we found that I didn't know about but really opened my eyes to something interesting is that in high schools, when there are resource officers, and these are officers that are doing great jobs, they love what they're doing, they love being with young people, but without good training on bias, they are over-citating kids of color in high schools. And when kids of color have more citations, they move towards a trajectory towards prison than they do to their white counterparts, just by the amount of citations they're getting in high school. So one thing that we've had to do is retrain police officers on helping them understand their implicit bias. But the other thing we have to do to educate ourselves is say that when we have a quality education system, that we can change trajectories of young people away from a cradle-to-prison pipeline and change them to a trajectory that would move them towards colleges or a productive and healthy and happy life. The same is true in another field altogether, and it's about food. So one of the things we're looking at right now in our country is that breastfeeding in our country is mostly occupied by white middle-class women. The only country in the world where white women are the ones white middle-class women are the kind of have the market on this, on breastfeeding. But the movement is called First Food Movement. And what we're finding is that when we create a comprehensive way for women to give nutrients to their children, and we think about family-friendly spaces in our businesses for women to breastfeed, and we're educating women about it, and we're making sure they have that kind of deep connection to their child, the child's life trajectory changes, so does the family's and so does the mother's. So these well-being indicators aren't about being fluffy. They're about reality and looking about what's going on systemically in our community.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Kilo, we are going to have to leave it there, even though I feel like we could go on for quite a long time. We most certainly would like to have you come back once things are more established and underway with the Park City Council and with the projects that are going on there. But thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, my gosh. I love your radio station. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of it today.
All right. Take care now.
All right. Bye.
That's Kilo Zamora. He teaches social change classes at the University of Utah, and he is also working with our Park City Council to establish a program for social equity here in Park City. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Time is 8:46. So what does the Kimball Arts Center have in common with Spain's Guggenheim Bilbao, Paris's Le Grand Palais? What do we have in common? We've got in the studio this morning Nancy Stokes. She is a curator with the Kimball Arts Center. Welcome. Thank you for coming in, Nancy.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So tell our listeners, what do we have in common with the Bilbao and with the Grand Palais?
Exactly. The Kimball is so excited to be presenting the fantastic work of Nikita Zanfall, whose work has recently been presented in retrospective exhibitions at these fantastic institutions in Europe. And to be able to bring it here to the Kimball and share it with our community here is such an exciting opportunity.
So tell us a little bit about your experience with Nikki de Saint-Lafal. De Saint-Fall?
De Saint-Fall, exactly.
De Saint-Fall.
Yes.
Tell us about your experience and your background and how it came about that you are bringing this amazing female artist to Park City.
Yes, so she is an artist who I have a very strong personal connection to. When I went to graduate school in art history, she was the topic of my master's thesis. I studied her early work in 1961 and 62, a body of work called her shooting paintings. And I've had the opportunity to travel throughout Europe specifically to view her monumental public art and her other pieces, and to also, I've been honored to lecture as well internationally about her work. And so it's something that I've been passionate about for a long time. And as a female artist and as a woman artist in the 20th century, she was very early on dealing with issues around womanhood and women's experience in society. And I think that the way that she addressed those issues, thinking about women's roles and women's bodies, and the very unique way that she did that in her work still has such a relevance for conversations that we're continuing to have today. So
yeah, some of
that's why I'm so excited that we're able to show her work.
Yeah, some of the images, they're just provocative and
absolutely
bold and, yeah, really, really something. Will there be paintings and sculpture and film also brought
so
into this?
Yes, we're presenting, about 30 pieces of her work. And it ranges from her early mixed media pieces and shooting paintings to sculpture and prints. And so it presents a great range of her work and shows how her very unique visual language crossed these various boundaries and showed up in her early work, in her late work, and across different mediums.
Yeah, so talk about the shooting of her art. And it sounds like maybe the Kimball is having a few feminist events at the center that might allow people to do something similar.
Absolutely. So the shooting paintings were a really interesting body of work from the early 1960s. And it was part of this moment when artists were reconsidering what art could be, who an artist could be. All sorts of new materials were being used in the making of artwork. And so what Nikita Zanfall was doing was placing bags of paint beneath a layer of plaster, and then she would take a rifle and actually shoot at the paintings. And the paint would spurt out and create this very evocative, very colorful, fantastic visual experience.
You almost said blood.
Yeah. And I almost said that because the way that she has talked about the paintings has been very provocative. And so she would talk about the painting bleeding almost.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so it was part of this really interesting moment that was focused around the evolution of what art could be and how you could make art. And we're really excited as part of the exhibition to show the richness of her ideas and how she executed them. And we have all sorts of interesting discussions around feminist art and art-making opportunities that can really help people to dive into the ideas that she was thinking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so, okay, so let's ask about the Feminist Friday. This is a chance for people to gather and discuss her artwork. And is that going to be more of like a classroom type of setting?
So it's going to take place in the gallery with her work in front of us, and we really just want to provide an opportunity to look at art and also ask questions and have some kind of more informal but in-depth discussions that can bring relevance and to this to the act of viewing her work.
And then on August 8th and the 15th, there are it's a two-session Women Made class where people can make their own nanas.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So am I pronouncing that?
You are. Yeah. It's another body of work that she's really well known for. It's these sculptures of women that are colorful and lively.
Polka dots and
exactly posed yeah. in these fanciful mid-frolic positions, and they're really fun. And we're going to be doing some art making around that those forms as well.
Okay. And you do say that it's for women or those who identify as female.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone can come if that's where they're
exactly
where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are two sessions for that. That's the 8th and the 15th. And then August 11th, there's the Fire Away, which yes. just sounds amazing. Talk about that.
And that's going back to her shooting paintings and thinking about making these mixed media pieces of different materials and then creating the very evocative, colorful surface that she was able to achieve through the shooting of the paintings, but using, in this case, spray bottles paint.
Really, really fun stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how do people sign up? What's the cost? What happens now?
Yes. So please join us on Friday for our community opening of the exhibition. It will be there from 6 to 8. For the classes, please visit our website, KimballArtCenter.org, and sign up. You can also call our front desk at 435-649-8882.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you so much. That's Nancy Stokes. She's the curator with the Kimball Arts Center. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Well, our final guest for the local news hour this morning, Park City Sailing Representative Casey Marsh, is here to talk with us about Women and Wind. It's an event that happens every Wednesday evening, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Jordan L. Welcome, Casey. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about Women and Wind and how can people get involved and how do you sign up if you're interested in learning how to sail?
Yeah, so we've had our organization out at the Jordan L for quite some time now, but it's been heavily dominated by males, and so we really want to get some females on the water. So we put together this program, which is available to any ability level. It's a light lesson with some social aspect involved, and so we have a lesson out on the boats from 6 to 8, and then we come back to the little picnic area at the new building out there for a social hour. And this coming Wednesday, we're going to have Sally Barkow come out, and she is a female Olympic sailor, as well as being part of the Volvo Ocean Race team. And she is leading the charge for women empowerment, and so she was the perfect fit to get other women involved.
So there are men's and women's sailing events in the Olympics? Or
yes.
Is she... Okay.
She's been part of the female Olympic team. She raced for about 10 years with the Olympics. And then she moved on from there to the Volvo Ocean Racing, which is a huge event. And they rose to the top with an all-female crew and did pretty great. So pretty special to have a summer Olympian here in Park City.
Yeah, I know. Very, very different. We're used to having those Olympians who slide and launch and do
right.
all those things, but to actually have somebody who can get out on water and catch the wind like that. So why is she coming?
She's
How did
do
it
a
happen?
Q&A with us, and so she's spending some time here in Park City over the summer, And we're going to try to have different events along with our Women Wednesday programs. And she will be coming out to do a Q&A that's open to all ability levels and all ages. So we really hope to get some of the young female athletes in town out as well. Some of those programs that are like Girls on the Run and spacing the other name of the one right now. But all ages welcome. So it's a great time for mothers and daughters to come out to the lake and just inspire that next generation.
And what kind of boats will they be learning on? Are they the little ones?
No, the ones that we'll have part of this lesson are called a Rhodes 19. It's a 19-foot keel boat, and it can fit about four or five women plus an instructor on there. We went out last week for the first time, kind of a light intro to the program, and had a great time. And it was the perfect mix of sailing lesson, but also a great time to just meet other women sailors. And we had all different ability levels, and we can kind of separate those out the more women that we have.
And are they mostly coming from Summit County, or are they coming from
mostly,
as far as Salt Lake?
We do have some Salt Lake contingent as part of our organization as well. And just wanted to note that you don't have to be a member of our organization to be a part of this event. This is open to everyone.
So what about gusts of wind? It seems like in the mountains we get some pretty hefty gusts happening around 11 or 12 o'clock. Is that an issue for people who are learning how to sail, or is that a good thing?
It's actually a good thing. It teaches you a lot of different skill sets, and it teaches you to really learn on the fly. So the instructors that we have out as part of our lessons are well capable of handling all the gusts that we have, and it makes it kind of fun that you really get a little bit of everything while you're out on the water.
Yeah, amazing. Anything else about your event?
Just that it'll be ongoing throughout the summer. The event this week on Wednesday had been sold out, but we just opened up some new spots in the boats so that we can have more women out in the boats as part of the lesson. But again, you can just join us for the social hour afterwards if you don't make it into one of the lessons.
Okay, and where do people go to sign up, or do they just show up? Or what?
If you just want to be part of the social, you can just show up. If you want to join one of our lessons this Wednesday or any other Wednesday throughout the summer, you can join us at our website, which is sailpc.org.
Okay. And Sally Barkow will be here this Wednesday.
This Wednesday.
To do the Q&A.
She'll be out sailing on one of the Olympic boats that was actually donated to us. And then she'll be joining us for Q&A on shore.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Casey Marsh with the Park City Sailing Club. Is it the club?
Association. We're
Association,
nonprofit.
Pardon me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us, and have a great time on Wednesday.
Great.